Blind Cool Tech 236, November 19, 2005.
Blind Cool Tech, the show where life,
hey y'all,
technology,
hello,
and blindness,
hello, is anyone here? I can't see anything.
Comes together.
Please welcome your host, Larry Skookman.
Hey y'all, how are you? Welcome to another edition of Blind Cool Tech. We have got a full show for you today. Stephen Bauer presents information on eating, child-sighted guides, and trying to recognize voices. A few other questions as well. Kai Zhang shows up with a demonstration of sound effects with Gold Wave and SoundForge. Chris Grabowski reviews the Bose Braille remote control. Rob Meredith is here in an interview to talk about Studio Recorder and Money Talks betas that have just been released. And we do kind of a silly little review or demonstration of a toy from a Happy Meal. It's all right here on Blind Cool Tech.
Hi, Larry. This is Kai, you know, the dude that's been making all these funky little intros for you. Finally getting on the feedback line to just say hi and to tell you how great this show really is. I really enjoy this podcast. It's actually the only one that I actually listen to religiously. That's right. I check your site almost every day. Yep, just want to say hi. And by the way, I got a very special surprise in line for you, so be prepared for that. Have a good evening. At least it is evening for you at this time. Talk to you later.
Great to hear from you, Kai. Really good to hear from you. I'm glad you called in. A surprise, huh? I wonder what our Blind Cool Tech listeners are in for next from the masterpieces of Kai's studio.
This is Steve Bauer out of Wichita, Kansas, and this segment is kind of a series of questions and comments that are all mixed up. I am actually recording this on my laptop using a brand new SM58 Shure microphone. So I'm holding the microphone, not using a mic stand, so hopefully it'll be a good test of this mic since this is the first recording I've made using this particular microphone. The discussion of eating and what to eat and what not to eat was interesting to me. I don't know, when I have to go out to a business lunch, and I always tend to go with the chicken strips because they seem to be the easiest deal to handle. And that generally works out pretty good, even though I, in many cases, would prefer something else. That's just the easiest and quickest thing. And so that's my approach on that particular topic. Another question that I would like to pose to see if there's any feedback on is using young children as sighted guides. For example, my niece is 8 years old, and the other day I needed to run into a restaurant to pick up some gift certificates to give away on my radio show, and my wife suggested that she take me in there, so we did, and she really did pretty good. I was a little nervous, but just kind of curious how others have dealt with that and how they get young children into being good sighted guides so you don't have to worry about things. I don't know about you, but sometimes identifying voices of people, especially those that you may only see once every week or two, can be a bit of a challenge. But the one place that I feel it's a horrible challenge, almost impossible, is church. If you're in church, not only are you generally talking with people you may encounter every week or two or three, but they are, in many cases, not even speaking in their normal voice. They all come up and go, "Hi, Steve, how are you doing?" And to me, that is so frustrating. And of course, the standard thing is people always wanting to talk to your spouse, your partner, your friend, and ask them the question instead of asking you. And I mean, we've been going to this same church for, almost 20 years now, a little over 20 years. And some of these people still will ask my wife a question. I do a lot of readings at Mass, and frequently I'm asked to fill in when people can't show up. And sometimes it's on the spur of the moment. And it's amazing to me how many times these people who I have contact with every week practically will come and ask my wife if I want to read. And she just always says, I don't know, ask him. So it's kind of weird. But how do people deal with identification of voices from occasional contacts, and especially in church, when most likely it's going to be a whisper, not even a full voice, which is real frustrating? And the final item on this particular short little deal that I'm doing is blogging. This seems to be a very popular thing, and I'm wondering if there is, and maybe I've just missed it, if there is a tutorial that is specifically designed for blind and visually impaired people to get us up to speed on blogging, the ins and the outs, what to do, what not to do, and setting them up, which services are really accessible. So if anybody has feedback on that, I would be interested in hearing from you. If you want to respond to me directly, my email address is steve@jazznotes, that's jazznotes.net, steve@jazznotes.net, or you could call one of my voicemail numbers from my shows. One of them would be 206-333-1999. 206-333-1999. Oh, and I knew there'd be one more thing I would forget. And the final question, I am currently using a Dell laptop for my work, so I can bring it home and handle certain things from the house. But I am finding that the laptop keyboard is a major challenge. I'm not comfortable with it at all. So I'm plugging another keyboard in and actually using a real keyboard on it, and I'm doing fine there. I understand that HP does make a laptop with a full-size keyboard on it. Does anybody have any experience with that? Or do you know of any other manufacturers that will be making a computer, a laptop, that has a regular stock keyboard on it? So that's it for now. For Blind Cool Tech, I'm Steve Bauer.
Steve, you bring up some really good points about sighted guide and younger children, and I thought I would point out that while my kids were growing up, it was not uncommon at all to have them doing sighted guide as young as 5 or 6 even. Now, you have to, of course, be cognizant of a couple of things. One, how often does the kid do it? And how much responsibility does the kid have before you can decide how much you trust them? In a lot of cases, even with my four girls, I trusted one a little more than the other, of, you know, just how responsible or aware they were, how easily they were distracted. Interestingly enough, the people at the Seeing Eye say that a dog's guiding is to be considered about the same as a young child in the 6 or 7 or 8 year old range, as far as how much responsibility the dog has and how much they could be aware of. So if that gives you any more comfort, or maybe a little less. As far as your comments about recognizing people's voices, I run into the exact same thing over there at work at APH. I mean, I may see these people, some of them, once a week or once a month. And in addition to, at least we don't have the whispering, but we do have a lot of background noises, especially in the plant area and so forth. And I don't know if this would work for everybody, but it's a technique I've used a few times. So if someone comes up and says, "Hey, Larry," you know, I might say, "Hey, Jill." And they'll say, "Oh, it's not Jill, it's Sue." So that, you know, it sounds a little bit better than, "Who's that? Who's that?" So great comments, though, Steve. Keep them coming. Thank you.
Hey, Larry. Hi, everybody. This is Beth from Newport News, Virginia, on a beautiful day. Oh, man. I'll bet it was close to 70, if not higher. This is really, really strange for November here. just wanted to make a few comments on some things that you said, Ray, your podcast. There is a place for professionally done podcasting, like if you're, you know, in a radio station setup. Actually, that's not a podcast, but communication is what I should have said. If you're a DJ or a news person on a radio station, yes, it should be professional. Otherwise, you know what? And this is true even of the radio personalities. We're all human, folks. And I find it very refreshing to have coughing and clearing the throat and going from one topic to another. It's conversation. And in this high-tech world, we need to communicate in the old-fashioned way a lot of times. As I say, in a radio station format, you can't do that. But with podcasts and other things, yes, we do need that. It is so refreshing, and I really appreciate that in yours and others' podcasts. And also, yes, so Larry, it isn't work. You're right. It's great fun. And I didn't realize when I made the request about more doggy information that you had done one in June, and I thank you for doing that, and I also thank you for doing the one Friday, the 11th. That's really cool. And yes, Jakester is one good puppy. All right, well, I think that wraps it up for now. I'm enjoying catching up on. I've just recently gotten involved with Blind Cool Tech, so I'm catching up on the older broadcasts. And, another thing, one more thing. I've made up my mind. I like the, you know, I'm not familiar enough with the names of these recorders yet, and it has just left my mind. The one that you usually use, iRiver. I like the iRiver recordings better than I do the jukebox. Because the iRiver, it's funny, you said the jukebox you might like better because it's brighter. The iRiver gives a more lifelike, it puts more bass, and yet it's still very bright. So for my money, I like the iRiver the best. How about you? Okay, guys. See y'all later. And yes, you're right about other people from other countries doing stuff. That was really, really cool about the person from Australia talking about the switchboard. I wish we had more switchboard jobs here in this country. I hardly see that anymore, and that's really sad. I'd love to do something like that. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Thank you, Beth, for the comments, and you bring up some good points about how a podcaster should act, and obviously it really depends on the podcast. You know, I think Neil brings up some good points, too, about microphones and what kinds of microphones are suited for what kinds of activities, and, you know, that discussion is very relevant to podcasting as well, because obviously if you're doing a podcast like one of the Blind Cool Tech walking home things, you know, we don't need a $3,000 mic or even this feedback show. I think we're getting the point across with our $60 mic, and it sounds reasonably well. Now, on the other hand, if I were doing a podcast about symphony orchestras or techniques in symphonies or some kind of training thing that required a high quality sound, those kinds of microphones and that kind of more expensive equipment would definitely be appropriate.
Hello, Larry and Blind Cool Tech listeners. In response to a post on a list about SoundForge and GoldWave and the various effects that they can apply to voice recordings, I decided to record this little blurb. With SoundForge,
you can make your voice sound like this.
Or you can make it sound like this. Perhaps you'd rather it sound like this. This is the little
not satisfied? How about this?
Perhaps you're fond of this effect?
Or, for something really wacky, try this.
With Gold Wave, you can easily do this with your voice.
This one's pretty easily done, too.
Or you could try this one. Maybe you really want to get whacked out and try this. These are just some examples of the kinds of things you can do in SoundForge and GoldWave. Remember that just because I use one program to do one thing and another program to do the other, it doesn't necessarily mean that each program is more suited to a different function.
It merely states my preference for one program over the other
based on the processes that I'm applying. Keep up the great work on Blind Cool Tech.
This is from the old school, new school. I'm down with the crew, and I want you to hear this.
And I look forward to the next podcast.
Finally, he's done babbling. Sheesh.
Blind Cool Tech.
Product review.
This is Chris Grabowski. I'd like to talk to you today about the Braille remote that Bose has now. I've seen an email going around on the lists where they talk about the Braille remote from the for the Bose Wave Music System. It's the little wave radio with the CD player and has no buttons. And the remote is credit card style, and the buttons, they're you can feel them, but they're a little difficult sometimes to feel them. So what Bose did is they come out with a remote for the Wave Music System that has Braille on it. Like, your power button is labeled PO, your mute button is labeled MT, your AM, FM is labeled FA, CD is CD, and AX, auxiliary is AX. So it's pretty cool. So I called on Friday, and I was just curious about the Braille remote. And what really impressed me was the person that I spoke to actually knew what he was talking about. He didn't, like, I'll have to transfer you to somebody else, so he really knew his product. So I said to him, I said, well, how much is the remote? And he goes, $9. So I bought one and received it today on the, today's the 15th, and that's not too bad, a couple days. And when I opened the package, it was in like a bubble wrap package. And it had a Braille sheet, just the contents of the package. It had a Braille sheet telling you how to insert the CD if you didn't know, which was impressive. It also came with an audio CD telling you how to use your Wave Music System. And I will play a quick portion of that right now in the Wave Radio.
Chapter 9, Customer Service.
Let's see.
Chapter 1, Introduction. Hello, and thank you for purchasing the Bose Wave Music System. This instructional CD will assist you in the operation of your new Wave Music System. We at Bose Corporation hope that you will enjoy your system for years to come. For further assistance or questions, please feel free to call our customer service department at 1-800-637-8781.
Okay, so that's pretty much it. I was really impressed with the remote. And for $9, I mean, $9, you can't beat it. And it's impressive that the company was so willing to do that. Just as a side note, I recorded this, tried something new. I recorded this podcast on the using the binaural microphones with the Plextalk PTR2. So if you want to contact me, my email address is chrisg@buffalo.edu. Thank you.
Hey, y'all. Beth from Newport News, and I'd like to take a guess, although I don't think I'm right, but I'm going to make a stab at it. What the heck? At the new mystery sound. You know, I'm glad that that's the mystery sound. I didn't know that the mystery sound is put up on the website. And doggone, I thought there was something wrong with my computer when that noise came on. Jiminy crickets. I would like to guess that that is a modem. It kind of sounds like one. Telephone modem. When it, after it's dialed in. I'd like to know what you guys think about what your favorite recorder is that Larry has used. I still say that the iRiver is the best. I didn't realize that you had been on the, you had not used the jukebox on Friday when you were, did you use that when you were talking about the dog? That must have been the one. This past Friday when you had more on dogs. You must have been using the, I forgot which one now. I think it's the one that that Bill's writing the letter about for accessibility. I still like the iRiver, the best of all the ones that you've used. It's the most lifelike, but I'd like to know what other people think. I think this would be a fun discussion to see who likes what the best. And what do you like the best, Larry? I don't think you've told us yet what you like the best. Okay, I think that wraps it up for now. I'm going to be submitting an email pretty soon with two web addresses and ideas for submissions. One is going to be about a UK product. And by the way, the person who sent in the one about Australia, it would be really, really nice to have, as you said, Larry, sound seeing tours of different countries, you know, people talking about their country, and then people out walking around and doing stuff, and in shops and restaurants and all that kind of good stuff. I'd like to see one of Ireland people, you know, the Irish brogue versus the Scottish brogue. I'd like to hear the differences in that. That's always fascinated me. And then the different, different dialects. I'll never forget reading Lassie Come Home with the Yorkshire dialect, and then Harriet, what's his name? All Creatures Great and Small, All Things Bright and Beautiful, Harriet. I forgot his first name, but those were good too. Okay, folks, that will do it for me. So, have a good one. Bye.
Absolutely, Beth. I would love to see some sound-seeing tours. We have some listeners in South Africa, Trinidad, Caribbean, of course, Australia, the UK. Mike Busboom did a fantastic sound-seeing tour of the Vienna, Austria public transit system, so be sure and catch that one. I'd love to see some more sound-seeing tours of even some really everyday occurrences. Jim Fiddler does a few of them, pubs and shops and so forth up in Newfoundland, which is always interesting. But I didn't realize there was such a difference until I had done a couple, maybe to a grocery store or buying a PC or whatever. And it's quite interesting to see the difference, apparently, between the way things are here in the U.S. and in other countries. And I think it would be really interesting to get, you know, the local flavor, just go into a small shop. In fact, I think I can probably do some of that the next time I go to rural Arkansas. Because there's some, I think we've lost a lot in the last 20 years, probably due to Walmart more than anything, but there used to be a lot of locally owned little mom and pop gas stations or specialty shops, and those were always quite an experience. I think quite a different type of experience that you see nowadays. And nope, that's not the mystery sound. We are actually going ahead and letting the mystery sound play when you access the website. So that way you can repeat it or do whatever you want to. I know it has scared a few people, and if we get one too totally bizarre, maybe we will opt not to do that. But for now, yeah, we are definitely doing that. As far as favorite recorders, I don't know yet. I'm in love with this MicroTrack, and the reason why, one reason, is there's none of these other recorders work very well in a car at all. But I tried the micro track one morning on the way to work, and check this out. This is a good recording.
Zurich University have dubbed a species of lemur, the Avani Klesi. The strain was discovered in the western region of Madagascar in 1990, but not named until now. This news is service of Odom's Tennessee Pride Sausage. Look for Tennessee Pride rolls, fully cooked links and patties, fully cooked sausage and biscuits, and real-sized breakfast sandwiches in your favorite supermarkets, and you'll taste the pride in Tennessee Pride. And you, too, will taste the pride in Tennessee Pride country sausage. That's your Eagle Country Morning Update.
OnStar by GM. Good morning, this is Jamie Martin with your WHAS.
Hey, can you believe how nice it's been so far, though?
A very rough morning, heavy rain and flooding across the region. It's going to be a rough day out there. It's going to be warm. Our highs today in the low 70s. That's going to set the stage for our cold front this evening. We're going to see more showers and thunderstorms, some of those on the severe side. Overnight lows into the low 40s. This is WHAS. First storm team in the row.
I want two sausage egg cheese biscuits. And a hash brown.
Hey Larry, this is Steve Bauer out of Wichita, Kansas. I had subscribed to some podcasts issued by the Wall Street Journal. Several issues came in and they have suddenly stopped and gone away, and I've hit a little bit of a roadblock in trying to find them again. So just wondering if anybody else has subscribed to Wall Street Journal podcasts and if they can pass along any tip as to a webpage where they can easily be found.
I looked at the Wall Street Journal's webpage and didn't get very far, but if any of you all out there know the answer to that, please do let us know, and thanks for calling in, Steve.
Hi, Larry. My name is Rich C. from New York. And first of all, I want to say I really enjoyed your talk with Marlena on the Marlena Show a few weeks back. Very cool. You mentioned there about a new Bookport firmware release that was coming out in a few weeks. Is that released yet? All right, well, keep up the great work, and I look forward to more Blind Cool Techs. Bye.
Hey, Rich, I wish I could say that was released yet, but it's not. We ran into a couple of bugs, and don't want to let those loose on the world, so I'm not even going to say when. It'll be very soon, though.
Hey, Blind Cool Tech, and Larry, this is Jake. Larry, I just wanted to make a comment on the podcast about the Roomba robotic floor vac. I heard this today, and it sounds like a really cool idea.
Well, I'm not sure what happened there, Jake. I will talk a little bit about the Roomba, though, because I love this thing. I wish I could get one that worked properly. The idea is superb, and there's actually a few of other brands out there now. I think there's a Zoomit and a couple others. Next time I do one, if I ever get another one, I'm going to do it with the binaurals, because the stereo separation on that lapel mic was just not there on that, because it's interesting to hear how it moves around the room. iRobot, the manufacturer of Roomba, has come out with a new one, and I really do want to get it. Maybe I'll ask for that for Christmas. But my girlfriend is starting to make fun of me because I buy so many of these kind of things, and she says they don't work, but I think they do. I mean, the little bin is always full of dog hair every time you use it. One of the problems is that the older ones were a little bit hard to take apart, but this new Roomba Discovery series, I understand, has it now where you can just snap the rollers out of it, so there's no screws involved or anything. And that makes cleaning those brushes, which you need to do about every 10 uses or so, especially in a dog environment like I have, makes it a lot easier. And supposedly they're more reliable as well. We'll see. But if that doesn't answer your question about the Roomba, Jake, feel free to call right back in.
Blind Cool Tech.
Special guest presentation.
We're in the recording studio of Larry's office with Rob Meredith. I'm going to talk to you today about a new version of beta of Studio Recorder and Money Talks. Hey, Rob, how you doing?
Pretty good. What's going on?
Yeah, same old good stuff, man. What do you want to start with?
Let's talk about my favorite product, Studio Recorder.
All right.
A few weeks ago, we came out with a beta of Studio Recorder. And we haven't heard much response on the list about some of these new features. So either we're the only people that like them, or people just don't know about them and know how to use them yet. So we thought we'd cover some of those issues a little bit today. We have essentially three new features in Studio Recorder. These are the ability to trim silence from the edges of a file, the ability to do a positional crossfade, in other words, a crossfade at the current location based on the data left and right of the caret position. And we finally have a way to do what we call a crossfade delete, which is after you hit delete, you get a small crossfade to minimize any kind of pops or negative side effects that result from the deletion. So we'll start with the edge trimming, probably the easiest to understand.
And you were a big fan of that one. We actually put it in there for another purpose, but Rob decided he could use it pretty.
Yeah, I always wanted that too. Edge fading.
That's one I hadn't even used that feature yet.
Actually, I haven't used it since we put it in either. It turns out that most of the kind of work I would use that for hasn't been on my plate lately. But essentially, this is the idea that we start at the beginning of the file, and we'll look for the signal level to reach a particular threshold. And you can specify the threshold when you use this command. And once that threshold's reached, we delete from the beginning of the file up to, but not including, that threshold. So that way we essentially trim the silence off the start of the file. And then we go to the end of the file and we do the same thing, but we do it in reverse. So we walk backwards until we find the threshold and just delete to the end, not including the actual sample that had the threshold level. And optionally, you can fade those edges slightly so they don't have any slight pops. You can type in a number of milliseconds you want to fade those edges. The crossfade command is another one of these commands that's been in my mind for a couple of years and I never really thought much about as far as how to implement.
Oh, this is the one I love.
But it's a widely used command now in the area of the Blind Cool Tech podcast. And what this does is it essentially, you specify how much time you want the crossfade to consist of and whether you want to actually perform a crossfade or just a straight even mix, a straight, basically, an unlimited mix.
So in the practical side of things, you just, one way to use it that I've used it is to, we'll say at the end of one of Kai's cool intros, where there might be a couple of seconds of music at the end, I can just start recording at the end of it and say something like, "Hey y'all, how you doing?" And then I can move my cursor to the beginning of that "Hey y'all," hit a F for crossfade, and a dialogue comes up and says, you know, how much do you want to crossfade in time? So if there's like 2 seconds of music at the end of that, I can say 2 seconds, and then there's 2 checkboxes that say fade out data left of cursor and fade in data right of cursor. So if I wanted to fade out that music to the left of the cursor, I just check that first one. And man, it works so cool. It's awesome. Good work, Big R.
Yeah, in that particular case, you would probably just leave the first box unchecked, because you don't necessarily want to fade in what you were saying. If you wanted to perform a transition, say from a scene to another scene, or from one musical segment to another, you would likely check both of those boxes, mm-hmm. and you would essentially crossfade between the two scenes.
Yeah.
A third option is to uncheck both of those boxes and get a 100% mix between the two scenes, which is not really a mix command that I know some of you are looking for, a traditional mix, because the crossfade times are limited. You can only crossfade about 12 seconds of data at CD quality, which is more than enough for a crossfade, certainly not more than enough for a mix. But if you choose to uncheck both of those boxes, you can essentially mix two scenes without any volume change.
Why the 12 seconds?
It has to do with the way we allocate memory. The crossfade is actually done in memory.
Hmm.
And we could make it longer, but we probably want to start writing out to disk. You need to use twice the amount of memory as the time of the crossfade.
Yeah.
So that's the crossfade, and then we just expanded that just a little bit more for our next feature, which is the crossfade delete command.
Which is also way cool. I use this one every day.
This is great. What this does is you have the normal delete command, but then a crossfade is performed with a very small crossfade time at the position after the material is deleted. So that way, rather than having the normal pops that you might get when you delete material, especially if you delete noisy material or material that has a lot of rumble or mic handling or motor running type noise, is you get a smooth transition at the point of deletion. In fact, it makes it exceedingly difficult to tell that a deletion has been made.
Yeah.
And we have it's actually the crossfade delete parameter, the time, is tucked away on the advanced page of the settings dialog, and the default is just 10 milliseconds, which is really all you need in most situations. That way you're not really, you're actually deleting another 10 milliseconds of material more than you request when you do the normal delete, but just 10 milliseconds is enough to minimize those pops. If you need it, of course, you can change that parameter, anything from, you know, 1 millisecond, and I forget what the top is, maybe half a second or so.
Hmm.
So those are some of the really exciting features, and it's great to use that for if you record one of these portable devices and you want to take out a sentence or two. Really minimizes those pops. And there's other ways to do this kind of work. One of our users had suggested that we have a find zero crossing command in a way that SoundForge does. And I thought about that, but oftentimes I found that even with the zero crossing, you don't always get the material to sound as smooth as you might like it to. Where if you use a linear crossfade, your chances are exceedingly high that you're going to get the sound you want.
So, and the practical application, the way this works is, of course, you mark the section you want to delete. Then instead of just hitting the delete key for a straight delete, you hit shift delete for the crossfade delete.
Right.
So and I'm trying to talk Rob into swapping those around so that the delete does the crossfade delete and the shift delete does a regular delete.
Right.
He's being resistant.
Yeah, that would be too much like if Microsoft Word, you selected a sentence and didn't select the period, and you hit delete and the Word said, well, I think he meant to select the period, so we're going to go ahead and take the period as well. That would be just a little bit aggressive, I think, with the traditional old-school delete remaining as it is and being an absolute by-sample or exact-time delete. The trouble with making a crossfade delete the default is that if you make a lot of minor deletions, you have a cumulative effect.
Yeah, that's true.
Where you actually delete a whole lot more material than you may have wanted. So if you're trying to fit within a time constraint, suddenly you'll have less material than you would think. It would take a while for those to add up. But we decided to err on the side of conservatism in this case and just require the shift key, which is pretty easy to plug in and hit to get the crossfade effect.
What else do we need to say about Studio Recorder except that it's up there? If you're interested in doing the beta test, go to aph.org/beta. Pick Studio Recorder after you agree not to sue us.
All right. I think that's it for now. We may have some nice features in the works before the next beta comes out.
Yeah, we're working on one right now that I'm really excited about.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk just a minute for people? Where does Studio Recorder fit in the grand scheme of sound recording software? Who wants Studio Recorder?
Well, I'm not putting Jake to sleep this time.
You got him riled up.
He must like Studio Recorder. I think, well, that's a tough question. Because the Studio Recorder saga is a complex and interesting one. Where we didn't originally write Studio Recorder to be a commercial product. We wrote it to fulfill a need in-house and decided to sell it. So you'll find in the case of Studio Recorder that I'm sure there's a lot of people that download Studio Recorder and they say, wow, this doesn't have all the kinds of things I was interested in. Like I can't use a digital delay or some reverb or any of those kind of things. But what you'll find if you look a little harder is it does, as far as I know, do exactly what it claims to do. And it's really more geared, I guess, toward spoken word content and, mm-hmm. and recording and production. We don't have a whole lot of back-end processing that you can do on spoken word content. I mean, now we have the crossfade. That makes it a lot more interesting. But if you really need to do tight, clean edits in an accessible manner, and you need to do a lot of them, then Studio Recorder might be for you.
I think also we need to be sure to mention that there's no other program around either that will allow you to navigate through a file. So if you're looking for places that you need to edit, you can actually, you know, when you hit the down arrow in Studio Recorder, you're moving by sentences. I don't know if you've noticed that or not.
Right.
And control down arrow is paragraphs. So it bases it on the pauses that you make between your sentences. Really excellent way to navigate and find places you need to edit.
Right, and we have a couple other methods of navigation. And it's really hard to get good navigation with these other off-the-shelf audio editing programs. For example, we have the traditional SoundForge-like 10% of WaveView with page up and page down when you're in the wave view. If you're in the time view, which is an alternate view, the page up and page down move by 5% of the entire file. Of course, we have the rewind and forward with the left and right arrows, and those are adjustable. You can set the time you want to use for those.
And that's navigation by time in the traditional sense of navigating through audio files.
Right. Then we have an alternate rewind and forward, which is hold down the Alt key and press left or right arrow. And I think that defaults to
30 seconds?
30 or 60, I can't remember which.
But you can adjust that.
You can adjust that one, too. So you can essentially have it set up so that when you press right arrow, it goes 5 seconds. When you press Alt right arrow, it goes 1 hour, if that's the way you like to work. On top of that, we have absolute and relative go-to. So you can press G and type in 5, and you'll be at the 5 second mark. You can press G and type 5:24 and be at 5:24. You can press G and type plus 5, and you'll be 5 seconds ahead of where you were in the file when you press G rather than 5 seconds absolute. Of course, the same goes with minus for a relative move back. And finally, as if that wasn't enough, you can press the dash or plus anytime without having to use the G, and you'll be in the go-to dialog with the dash or plus character already typed for you, and you're ready to go. So you can press, for example, if you want to move ahead 10 minutes, you can press the plus, and it's actually the unshifted, so technically it's the equals sign key. So you press equals 10 and either space or semicolon or colon. We made it real flexible, so you don't actually have to shift the colon if you're lazy. So let's say we do equal sign, 10 semi, enter. And that'll move you 10 minutes ahead in the file. And the reason we have made it so flexible is that the relative go-tos remember the last times that you used for each one. So if you hit G to go to a time, it presents the current time as the default. If you hit the plus or equals key, it presents you with the last relative positive move you made on that key. And same with minus, it's a separate value that's used for the negative relative go-to. So, and believe it or not, this sounds overkill, but I actually have used these commands. If you're working on a particular project and you often need to go back 30 seconds, but you want your alt and right to go 2 minutes, then you can use the dash to go back 30 seconds, and it'll remember until you change it.
Yeah.
It's real handy.
Another thing, too, that you won't see on a lot of other off-the-shelf programs is this ability to speed up the spoken word content without affecting the pitch, and that's just built right into this from the ground up.
Right. There's two ways to do that in our product. What you'll find in other programs is you can do that often, like in SoundForge, for example, on the process menu. They call it time stretch. But, and we have a way to do that as well, but that actually changes the data in the file. If you just want to listen to something fast without actually making any modifications, you can use our increase rate command, which happens to be F3, and decrease rate, which is shift F3, and not affect the actual final file content. So if you just want to move through stuff quickly, like for example, if I prepare a short segment for Blind Cool Tech, I certainly know what I said. I just want to see how it flows and if there's anything I really messed up. So I'll just maybe speed it up to 2 or 3 times normal speed and let that maybe rip and get through it much more quickly.
So yeah, I guess in short, this isn't SoundForge. It doesn't have all the processing, but if what you want to do is record some spoken word audio content in anything from a casual, laid-back manner to what we do in the studios for the National Library Service in a very professional environment, this is your software.
Yeah, it's very, very easy to use. For example, I think most other audio recording programs have at least one dialogue before you actually begin recording. You hit record, and instead of actually recording, you get the dialogue, and you have to fill out certain things, or just hit record in that dialogue. We're much more like a word processor, where you tap record and you're just recording right where you were. If you start the program, you're recording, of course, at the beginning of the file. If you hit shift record, then you're actually inserting material rather than overwriting material.
Yep.
It's very easy to use, and it might surprise people to know that I, even though I work for APH and Rode Studio Recorder, I happen to be a large SoundForge proponent as well. I do own and use SoundForge on a semi-regular basis. I don't have any problem with other audio programs. But it turns out I use Studio Recorder probably 90% of the time. So for the kind of things I need to do, even in the case of getting old material into the computer from cassettes or from vinyl, or for editing these kind of recordings, I find Studio Recorder much easier to use.
Oh, you know, another thing about Studio Recorder, I don't think, at least for accessibility, that anybody else does, is what about the scrubbing in SoundForge?
I've heard that there's some macros you can get for SoundForge that have scrubbing, so I don't think we're the only ones that do it.
Okay.
But ours comes for free.
Yeah, so this is like, if you really want to do some fine-tuning, and I use this all the time, you can hit control right and left arrow, and you just move by very, very small amounts, and it repeats the sample that you're on, so you can hear very clearly the parts that you're getting to. And if you can hold down like control right arrow and move quickly, and it's almost like you're hearing the recording, and then you can stop, back up a little bit, and it's a real easy way to make deletions or edits or whatever you need to.
It's very easy to move right up onto a word or a phrase or even a little tick in the file that you want to get rid of.
Yeah.
And of course we let you adjust not only the scrub move time, which is the distance that each scrub press moves you, but we also allow you to adjust the scrub play time, which is the amount of material that gets played every time you scrub. So those two parameters are independent. Normally you would keep those bound together at the same value. We kind of prefer 30 milliseconds around here, I believe. But if you need to play a longer scrub segment or a shorter one, you can do that easily with Studio Recorder as well. We put the scrub feature in originally, not only because it would be great for blind people, but we originally put it into Studio Recorder because the people downstairs needed a way to hear material they wanted to delete, and we didn't at the time have a WAV view.
Yeah.
So that's originally how this came up, and at the time we put it in, we thought it would be great for everybody. And then toward the end of the initial product development phase, we decided to put the WAV view in anyway. So sighted people get their traditional way of doing things, and blind people can essentially scrub through and hear what the kind of things you might see if you could see with the WAV view.
One other thing that probably is Studio Recorder's trademark as far as accessibility goes is our audible peak meter. And I'm sure any of you blind cool tech listeners have heard this thing, but that one actually would be pretty easy for us to give you a demonstration of right here. All I have to do is turn up my computer output a little bit and talk a little loud. That was it. All right, it's down now.
I always snap my fingers to see where the levels are and make sure I'm getting a signal. But, the audible clipped peak indicator on the record meter is a real handy feature. I was really surprised to hear on our list, though, that some people choose to disable that feature. And I suppose if you record in kind of a loose, casual, open-air environment with speakers rather than headphones, that sound getting into your recordings on a regular basis would be annoying. But yeah. I've personally never disabled that feature. I can't live without it.
One other thing we're talking about doing, too, although this kind of breaks our philosophy of Studio Recorder, it's been not as easy as it should be to read the exact value of the meters. So we're toying around with the idea of a command that would actually just speak I guess they're called the holds, the peak holds.
Yeah, we have two peak hold values, one for each channel. In the case of a monofile, they're matched. And unless you know how to use your screen reader extensively, it's fairly difficult to read those in a quick pinch. It's not a problem for me because I defined a frame years ago with JAWS, but if you don't want to get into frames and such, it might be a little difficult to read that meter. And I really believe that if you're going to do any kind of serious or semi-serious work, you really need to be able to read that peak hold.
Yeah.
So we've been trying to, actually over the time, not just recently, but for a couple of years now, on the back burner, kind of think of a way to make that meter a little more accessible. So we may be doing that too in the future. A way to, I guess reading the value is the best way to do it. I mean, I tried to think of other ways, like I guess you could Morse code them out, or all kinds of crazy stuff you could do. All said and done, I think most people would be just plenty happy with hearing them spoken. The difficulty then becomes, well, how are you going to speak them? Are you going to use a canned numbering system, or are you going to use a sappy synthesizer? There's drawbacks to each scheme, unfortunately. Back in the old Apple II GS days, with TextTalker GS, we used to beep out error codes. And if the program couldn't speak for some reason, we would take the hex values, so you have essentially a number from 0 to 15, and we would put a dot in the middle of it, essentially. And that worked great for communicating error codes, but unfortunately it's not fast enough for communicating peak information. It's a shame we couldn't think of a clever way to do it that way.
Yeah. We've even thought about beeping the computer speaker so it wouldn't get in the recording.
Right.
But like Rob pointed out, the loudness of those things is wildly varying.
Yeah, your computer speaker and the duration of the tone may be a little bit hard to control.
Should point out that we are in a new beta cycle with Studio Recorder, which means that the beta is a fully functioning copy of the program and will work from 90 days from when we place that beta up there. So if you're interested in trying this program out, now is a good time to do it.
That's right.
Okay, enough about Studio Recorder. Thanks, Rob.
All right.
Let's talk about Money Talks.
Okay. We just put a beta of Money Talks up yesterday, the 15th of November. Money Talks is in pretty good shape, we think. There haven't been any major upgrades to the program since its release, which was just this summer, right? July?
Yep.
But we've gone back and fixed a couple of problems that users had. We had a few actual bug fixes, and we had a couple of minor feature additions. We now have the ability to allow the user to decide when reconciling if they prefer to use the bank's payname, memo, item, and date field, or if they just prefer to use their own, the way they had typed it in initially on the transaction. So if you write a check now, instead of having your bank overwrite the name of who that check was to with something useless like the word check, you can have that left alone.
We should point out that this applies to when you import QIF files from your bank.
Right.
If you're
not a KIF file user, you're good to go. This doesn't really affect you. So that's one of the nice little features we added. We also had a situation, actually through development time, where the debate raged on, quietly though, about whether to put credits before debits. I strongly believe, and continue to operate this way, that you should always have your debits before credits on the same day. And that way you don't really have to worry about getting into an overdraft situation. Mm-hmm. But I realize there are others who would prefer to either have credits first because that's how their bank gives them the information, or they just want to assume that the an electronic deposit, for example, is going to be there. So we added a checkbox in the settings dialog to let you insert your credits before debits on the same date. This doesn't affect your existing files. This is just additional insertions that you make forward. So that should make a few people happy anyway.
Yeah.
The other kind of major thing we did was we made the program respect the Windows regional settings for dates when importing and exporting KIF files. So the motivation for this was we had a user in another country who was having trouble importing their KIF file because they used like a DDMMYY format. And the KIF specification, as it were, pretty much acted as if it was always MMDDYY. And unfortunately, the KIF specification, KIF files were never really supposed to be used for what they actually wound up being used for. They were actually developed as a debugging tool by Quicken. And it's just one of these things that got out of control. It got crazy. So the specification is very loose, and banks do pretty much whatever they want to with KIF files. They loosely follow the rules, if at all. And rather than try to change all the banks, we thought it might be better to just go ahead and use the regional settings for dates, and that way if you happen to live in a DDMMYY country, your stuff should automatically begin working with this new beta.
We should point out, too, that these QIF files are a way that you download data from your bank to reconcile your checkbook, or I guess a lot of people actually, and I'm guilty of this at some points myself, just importing that data from your bank and not ever entering it the first time. But the real way to use this program is to enter it by hand and then use that QIF file to reconcile your transactions with what the bank says your transactions
or,
are.
Or you can do what I recommend, which is you take the bank at their word the first time. You import the KIF file into the registry when you first get the program, and then you can work from, you know, assuming all that's correct, you can just import following data into the bank grid and reconcile that way.
Yeah.
Finally, we added the ability to restrict the view to either cleared or uncleared transactions only. Some people wanted the ability to do that, and it was pretty simple to throw in, so we just dropped it in there. The advantage here is if you restrict to your uncleared transactions, for example, the running balance column shows the total of those uncleared transactions as you go through them.
We always had a way to move to the next and previous uncleared transaction, but this restriction does have that advantage of the balance, adding them up. We should point out, too, that this restriction feature is a very cool one in Money Talks. You can, I guess the simplest way to explain it is you can go to a field, say it's the payee field, and you see your electric bill there. Well, the simplest way to use this thing is to hit Control F3, and that'll restrict the view of the whole register to nothing but transactions from your electric company. So it makes it real easy to go from one to the other to see what they are, and then they all get added up in your balance column over there.
Right.
And then you can further restrict that view too. So if you just want to see this year's, you can go up to January and arrow down. Or wait a minute, no, we don't have the arrow restricting yet, do we? The shift arrow?
No, we don't, but you can...
You can do it by date.
No, well, you can. There's a couple ways you can do it. You could select the range with the shift arrow keys and then pick restrict
to
selection on the view menu, which is kind of a new command. Or you can hit escape to make sure you're showing everything, then pick view by date, type in the date range, and then move to the transaction type you wish to restrict to, and then you can restrict again. So you have first narrowed it down by a date range and then narrowed it down by a particular pay name.
Keep talking. I gotta get this door.
All right. So there are several ways to use the restricted view. An alternative for the restricted view, rather than finding a particular item and hitting Control F3, is to actually type part of the thing you're interested in. For example, if you want to find all transactions with pay names that begin with the letter L, you could move to the pay name field and press L, and the view restricts to just those transactions. And if you type fairly quickly, you can continue to limit your search by letter. So you could type LE, and the view would further restrict as you type. And then if you hit a letter that's not available in that restriction, for example, you type LEB and you don't have any transactions with pay names that begin with LEB, you'll get a little beep. And you can always hit escape at any time to unrestrict the view, no matter how many times you've restricted it. So escape is always, it doesn't actually nest. Escape is always a full normal view command, essentially.
So that typing in values in those fields, it's almost like a find combined with a restriction. So you can even do that in the amount field.
Right.
I don't know if you mentioned that or not.
No, I didn't get to that yet. You can't do it in the date field because we have a view by date, which is, you know, because it's a little harder to get the date range that way. But you can type an amount. You would start with the negative or plus, depending on the type of the transaction.
Well, and that's actually a way to restrict the view by those anyway. Just type a dash, right?
Right. If you want to see all your debits, just go to the amount column and hit the dash key. And that'll instantly restrict to those. If you want to see all your transactions that were a credit of $20, you go to the amount field and press plus 20. And actually, you would probably press plus 20 period, because
that's right.
Right, that would show 200 and 2000 and such as well, the first version of that. So there's all kinds of ways to use the program. And of course, we have the traditional find previous and find next commands, where you do your good old Control F, type in the thing you're interested in and press enter. And then you can do your Shift F3 to go back and your F3 to go to the next one.
Yeah.
And that way you can use an unrestricted view if you prefer.
You know, Rob, we should make this a regular feature on BCT, where come in here maybe once or every week or two and talk about some particular feature in a program like this for a few minutes.
I want to do at some point, when I can think of them all, 101 things that Studio Recorder does nobody knows about.
Yeah.
There's probably only 10, but I'll try to make it as interesting as I can.
Okay. Anything else? I guess we should tell people Money Talks is also in beta as of just, yesterday? Did we put that up? Go to aph.org/beta and look under Money Talks. And same thing, 90 days. Check it out. Kick the tires.
Right.
Make a miser out of you. All right. Thanks, Rob.
All right.
Coming to you pre-recorded from Louisville, Kentucky, it's the Blind Cool Tech Podcast.
There was a discussion on the list about how it's possible to take someone's words out of context and make them seem like they said something they never really said. And we all saw examples of this back in the 70s, and especially, I guess, where, you know, words would be mixed in with a song. But I think with today's audio technology and techniques, you can go quite a bit further. And here's a perfect example. This is actually kind of a mashup of a mashup. I mean, where else are you going to hear George W. Bush singing John Lennon's Imagine and Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild Side, all mashed up together?
Imagine yourself heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. heavenly sky. Imagine all people living for today. The color girls say, take a walk on the wild side. 1, 2, 3, 4. Imagine yourself countries. It isn't hard to do that. Nothing to kill or die for. No religion to. Imagine all people living life at peace. The color girls say, take a walk on the wild side. Take a walk on the wild side. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood of man. Imagine all people sharing all the world. The colored girls say, take a walk on the wild side. Take a walk on the wild side. Take a walk on the wild side. Take a walk on the wild side.
Very tricky.
Peace.
That's from IanButlerMusic.com. He's got several of those kind of mashups up there. Check him out.
Blind Cool Tech. Product review.
The other day, we got Marley a Happy Meal, and of course, as many of you know, from McDonald's, of course, Happy Meals always contain a little toy. Well, this particular one was quite interesting. You wind it up, and it's a little plastic dog, stands probably about 5 inches tall, and he actually throws himself in the air and does a flip.
I'm going to wind up the dog.
What are you doing?
Winding up the doggy. What color is this dog?
Black.
He's black? Mm-hmm. So you wind him up, and then he jumps like head over heels, doesn't he? I mean, he does a flip. Mm-hmm. All right. You ready? Mm-hmm. You push him on the head to get him started here. Here we go. Very good. Oops, he fell. He fell over on his side, didn't he? All right, let's try him again. Ready? Oh, he fell right over. No, he didn't.
You can,
okay. Fell on his face.
Look at him, Daddy.
Okay.
Fell on his face?
He did that time. Mm-hmm. He fell right on his face. Sometimes he falls sideways, but this time he fell on his face. He fell on his face again. Okay.
You're getting heavy.
And the heater coming on. All right. Face every time. I thought sometimes that time he fell on his side.
I see my doggy.
There he is. Have at him. Let's put the lid on the pretzels and put them up, okay? Jumping McDonald's bug. I mean, dog bug. Get him wound up. There you go.
I push his head.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do this. Push his head, Pappy.
You push it.
You push it. You push it.
Okay.
Doggy's head.
Yes, ma'am. Here goes. Whoop, you didn't wind him up enough. Mm-hmm. Wind him up more.
I can't wind him.
You were winding him just now. Look, just wind him up like that.
Like that?
Yep, like that. Until it makes that sound. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
You sure?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He
found his head. Yeah, he did.
Uh-huh.
Well, he fell again, didn't he?
Uh-huh. He fell again.
All right, you want to wind him up?
No.
You want me to?
Uh-huh.
All right, I'll wind him up. So whenever you start turning this thing, Mars, his head little kind of locks it in, so he's ready to push his button. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
You sure?
Mm-hmm.
You sure?
Mm-hmm.
You sure? You sure?
Yes, Pappy.
Okay.
With my mama.
She's at work.
Okay.
She's on the moon.
She's at work.
Okay.
Where's Linda?
Linda? I don't know. Linda had the night off tonight. You talking about Linda Lou?
Linda Lou's at work.
Linda's not working tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he just, he fell that time.
Mm-hmm.
What, baby?
Right there by you.
You want to sit? You want to sit with me?
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
I sit by you.
All right, there you go.
And my pretzels.
All right, get them. Just get them all. We don't want to let the dog jump in your pretzels.
Mm-hmm. Put him right there. Put him right there.
Right there?
Mm-hmm. Right there.
Ready?
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Thank you.
That was some jumping, wasn't it?
Yeah. I lived.
Oh, gosh, he's still going, isn't he? Want me to wind him up again?
Mm-hmm. Turn right there.
Okay. I'll sure do it. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Oops. Oops, I didn't stand him up. Well, he doesn't want to stay standing up, does he, Mars?
Mm-hmm. I see him.
Hmm?
I'm playing with him.
Okay.
I push his head in his knuckle.
Okay. Whoa. He jumped. Hey, what you want for supper? You want hot dogs and green beans? What was that? You gonna come help me cook? Whoops, he fell. He fell, Mars.
Hey, guys. I just finished listening to, I guess it was yesterday, cracked me up with Fred and Jake, how they behave together. I'm glad they get along. I was thinking that, or I wondered, before I started listening to the podcast, I, and really getting to know the two of them, I was thinking, gee, I wonder if Fred's jealous of Jake because Jake gets to work and Fred doesn't. But no, they're fine. That's funny that I think it's Fred. He likes to suck on a washcloth or something. That is hilarious. And like you said, Larry, they act like they haven't seen each other in 2 weeks when you get home. Thank you for doing the review on the, quote, best, unquote, digital recorder. And, of course, as you said, it depends on what you want it for. When I was saying best, I was saying that the iRiver seems to have the most natural sound to it. It seems to have the best lows and the best highs. But the others are not far behind it. And I don't believe that the MicroTrax is worth the extra hassle and expense. I'd go with either the iRiver or the Olympus. And I love that rainstorm and that train, and that was interesting about the movie camera that you were talking about. The iRiver to me just seems to, and I agree with what I think it was Rob said, that natural noise, sometimes you really want to get just natural noise, and I thought the iRiver captured the best lows and the best highs, and you just got the most natural sound out of it. So I wonder what you think about that. Okay, I guess that's it from me for now. This is Beth, if I didn't say so, from Newport News, Virginia. So talk to you later, everybody. Have a good one.
You too, Beth. Yeah, this is a difficult topic. There's no doubt about it. The Olympus DS2, for ease of use and quality, as we've said on here a few times, is tough to beat. The iRiver makes a great recording if you can catch it right the first time. The beauty of this MicroTrax, though, is that you can record it at a low enough level that you can go back and dynamically compress the lower sounds, which I hadn't done yet. So there's lots and lots of issues involved with these, and we're still learning, so we'll keep you posted.
Hey, it's Beth again. Two more quickies. Number one, do you have a limit on talk time on this line? I ran into that the first time I started to do the recording, the last one, and so I re-recorded it. Just curious. And the second thing is, on, I guess it was yesterday's recording when it was raining and you called Shelley for a ride. And I've noticed at other times, and I haven't correlated it with this, except for this time when you were talking to Shelley, but when it seems like, and I'm going to watch this, but it seems like when you use a cell phone, there is interference. It sounds like what I believe the terminology is a square wave. It's like, it's really a strange sound. And then when you put the phone away, it stops. And I don't know if it's that just my system or if anybody else is noticing it. It's not bothering me. It's just one of those techie type puzzles that I thought I would bring to your attention. So, that's it for now. Bye, everybody.
Yeah, that's true, Beth. I have definitely noticed that as well. Although I made a recording the other night in another storm that wasn't the case on, so I guess it doesn't always do it. Another thing I've noticed is when I go out my front door, there's a wireless door sensor there. And sometimes it will make noise on the recording, and I haven't figured out the pattern yet, but hopefully we will.
Hey, Larry, this is Eric in Fountain Valley, California, and I just wanted to call and make a quick comment. Yes, for me, that's an unusual thing, but I'm going to give it a shot this time. I noticed that in the two podcasts from November 14th that you used the micro track, especially the second one, where your best digital recorder continued, I believe is the title of it. The volume level is really low. It harkens back to the early Blind Cool Tech, where it was really kind of, it was a pain to have to keep adjusting your volume. And I know it's got to be the micro track, I don't know what recorder you used to record the interview with Christine or Chris Robbins, the Canadian intern. I'm sorry, I don't recall her name for sure. But that volume level was fine. So I don't know. For whatever the reason, the volume level on those other two was just, especially the second one, like I said, was just low. Other than that, great podcast. And I wanted to thank you for podcasting the cooking of the chili. That was extremely informative, and I've never cooked before, but I think you gave enough information that I'm actually considering pulling it off. So, thanks very much for that, and we'll talk to you soon. See? Quick! I'm out.
That was quick, Eric. You're right, the recording levels on those were purposely down, and please excuse me, I'm still experimenting and very much learning. What happens is that you need to record these things with the level down, because the loudest noise that you get in a recording is got to be at full scale or close to it without clipping. Unfortunately, what needs to be done is I need to post-process these things and bring the lows up and keep the loud stuff where it is. And we will begin doing that, indeed. I just haven't been totally comfortable with all those techniques, but Rob is actually working on some things and been showing me some stuff. In previous ones, of course, what I did was raise the volume up for the main part of the recording, like with the iRiver, and then when a train or a loud car came by, it just clipped. So the idea here is we're going to keep the levels down and then artificially raise them later and hopefully get no clips anywhere. The cooking, yes. I hope, in fact, that was a great show that Damien did. You're right. And thank you very much for that, Damien. Good information there. Good high-quality recording. And loved it. I hope, in fact, that we can get a regular segment on Blind Cool Tech with some cooking tips and tricks for the blind cook. I know there's been a few of those done here and there, but new recipes. In fact, I think Mary has pretty much started on this journey a little bit. She's given us the snow cone maker demonstration and making the health drink. So, and she's talking now about some pumpkin pudding or pie or both. So, we'll see. Thanks.
Hey, Larry, it's Kai again, and I forgot to hazard a guess at the mystery sound. I think I know what it is. It's one of those toy lightsabers from Star Wars. At least that's what it sounded like to me. All right. Talk to you later.
Yes, that is exactly it. I didn't think anybody was going to get that. Very good, man. Good guess. And then, just as we were putting this issue to bed, this came in.
Hey, Larry, this is Darren Duff, and I hate to break it to you, man, but I already guessed what mystery sound number 9 is. Now, Chris Kabowski's microphone is a little penny to pick it up what it was, but me and my wife were sitting here listening to it, and she said, I played it one time. She says, I don't know what it is. Why don't you replay it? And I replayed it, and it hit me. Being a big Star Wars fan myself, I never can escape. I never will mistake the sound of a lightsaber. That's what it is, one of those electronic lightsabers that probably lights up and makes the sound, and he ignited it and waved it around for a few seconds and then shut it down again. I know that's what it is. I'm a big, huge Star Wars fan, and I don't even have a doubt in my mind that that's wrong. So, what's that, Kim? It's right. She says it's right, too. So you got 2 guesses over here. All right, Larry, have a good one. Talk to you later. Bye.
All right, thanks, Darren. Very good. You and Kai and your wife all. That was the only 3 correct guesses, though. So congratulations, all 3 of y'all.
Coming to you pre-recorded from Louisville, Kentucky, it's the Blind Cool Tech Podcast.
Okay, we now have mystery sound number 10. This one was submitted by Rob Meredith. We're going to proceed with a couple of seconds of silence and follow because it's another fairly subtle one. Here's the sound. Okay, and that will be on the webpage as well. That's going to do it for edition 236 of Blind Cool Tech. You all please keep those submissions, comments, suggestions coming in. This is turning out to be a really great venue to share ideas, techniques, and hopefully to give some encouragement to people. Y'all have a good one, and we'll catch you next time.
You've been listening to Blind Cool Tech. Visit us on the web at blindcooltech.com. Our email address is blindcooltech@gmail.com, and our comment line is 206-984-9203.